We are doing the best we can. We had a class yesterday, and in that class Mari had this spiritual gifts class, and it was absolutely wonderful. We talked about the spiritual gifts. We talked about how sometimes others can see our gifts before we can, and they might compliment us on those gifts. And sometimes there's a tendency to go, oh, shucks, you know, or play it down like it's not a big deal. But sometimes it is a big deal. You know, we've really gone out of our way to do something. And so what we talked about was instead of playing small, Mari pointed out beautifully that Marianne Williamson says that, you know, it doesn't do the world any good for us to play small to make someone else feel better. So if someone compliments us, what we came to an agreement on was that we should just say thank you. Just say thank you. And I couldn't help it. I couldn't help it. When we got to that point, I had to raise my hand and say, okay, we just said that it's okay to take compliments and just say thank you. Tomorrow I'm going to tell you not to take it personally. And everybody laughed, of course. And it is so very true. It is hard sometimes to take those compliments. Don't take things personally. That's the one of all of these agreements, and this comes from the book, The Four Agreements, by Don Miguel Ruiz, that we started on last week, and we're continuing today. Don't take it personally is my favorite. From the very beginning, it resonated with me. Like, how can we not do that? It's been a powerful little book. I think, in my opinion, it is a how-to for knowing how to change our thinking. And changing our thinking is our third basic principle. The law of mind action is what we call it. So I like this book because it helps us to actually practically do some things that will help us root out some of these old error thoughts that we had, these old beliefs that we may still have stuck within us. So Ruiz starts out and he lays kind of a foundation. He tells us that a whole lot of our beliefs come from childhood experiences. Makes sense, because when our parents, our grandparents, teachers, those people that we loved and trusted, when they told us something, chances are we would accept that as true. We had an example last week, it's not always good, an example last week of the mother who told her little girl that her voice was ugly. You know, she had a splitting headache, she was tired, exhausted, and she just snapped and lashed out at the little girl. Well, the little girl believed it. She took it in. She believed it because her mom said it. You know? When we do that, we learn that to get acceptance and affection and approval and even love, that we often have to do things to please other people, to please those caregivers, to please our parents. And it's pretty scary if we don't get their approval, their love. So we will go to great lengths when we're children to get that love. So much that we then begin to pretend to be, perhaps, who we are not. We pretend to be well-behaved, or we, like the little girl, stopped singing. You know, she stopped being that joyful expression through music. She stopped that because she believed it. We tend to believe those things, and we will go to great lengths to protect that. We learn to pretend to be someone else. That is not how we want to be. And then because we have to look to other people for that approval, that acceptance, because we don't have anything in us to let us know if we're doing it right. You know, when you've heard of a gut reaction or gut feeling or just that intuition, sometimes when we have that, we know, yes, this is the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do. But as children, we come up And if we're doing things that we need other people to tell us, this is what you do and this is what you don't do, we're like ships that without rudders. We don't know. We don't know if we're doing it right or wrong. So we're constantly looking out there for that acceptance and that approval and that love. Ruiz says that by accepting these four agreements that we're talking about in this little book, that we will gain enough personal power back to be able to break some of those old agreements. They will come to light. We'll notice them in our consciousness when we have the chance to change them. We have a chance to change our thinking. We have a chance to break those old agreements and then therefore begin to live the life that we want to be all that we can be. So last week we talked about be impeccable with your word. That was the first agreement. And what that really means is use the power of your words in positive ways, in loving ways, not destructive, harmful ways. Too often if we give in to gossip or condemnation of another person or even ourselves, you know, we're tearing down, we are destructing, we're not constructing. So be impeccable with your word means to make a decision that I'm going to only use my words in loving ways, in powerful, supportive, constructive, loving ways. So that was last week. This week is don't take anything personally. Now, last week, it was a show of hands. Most people have read the book, are familiar with it, and Reverend Lee has done a series on it. And so it isn't like this is the first time you've heard it. But I have to say that the first time I heard don't take anything personally, my reaction was like, what? Are you kidding? How can you not? I have all this evidence that I should be taking it personally. It reminds me a whole lot of a book that by Gary Simmons, and if you took that class with me, Eye of the Storm. In there, he says, no one and no thing is against you. No one and no thing is against you. And it's that same kind of reaction, really? But, you know, I got this. They're saying the same thing. Don't take anything personally. No one and no thing is against you. It's the same. But how can you do that? How can you not take it personally? So what if someone that you care deeply about gets angry at you and starts yelling at you? Just how do you not take that personally? Or what if someone lies about you? What if someone takes credit for a project that you did, but they take credit for it and they end up getting a promotion and you don't? How do you not take that personally? Or going the other direction when somebody tells you that you're wonderful. Can't I take that personally? Not really. That's not what we want to do. It is not easy to do this. Even Peter, Jesus' disciple, had kind of a case of taking things personally. We read in the last chapter of the Gospel of John, chapter 21, you may be familiar with the passage. Jesus asks Peter three times if he loves him. And Peter always answers in the affirmative, yes. And by the third time, it says he's feeling kind of hurt that Jesus keeps asking him, yes, I love you. At the end of that section, Jesus says, come, follow me. Then they start walking along. And Peter looks around, and there's John following them. And so he turns to Jesus, and he says, what about him? I kind of think that it sounds like Peter's a little jealous. You know, they've just had this wonderful heart-to-heart kind of thing. You know, do you love me? Yes, I do. I'll do anything. Jesus told him to take care of the sheep, you know, tend my sheep. They've had this wonderful bonding time, and now walking along, come follow me, they're together, and there's somebody following. So Peter didn't like it. He took it personally. I think he was jealous. To begin to explore into this and figure out How do we not take things personally? First, we want to recognize that everything that we say or do, this just makes sense, comes from our personal values and our experiences. Of course it does. You know, all that I have been through in my life, all that you have been through in your life, all the beliefs that each of us have make us the people that we are. So there is no way that we couldn't be affected by seeing the world through the lens of our beliefs and our experiences. Of course. If I tell Allison, I love your outfit, or if I say to Mari, oh, that book was great. I love that book that you mentioned. Or if I say, I hate mosquitoes, and I do hate mosquitoes. All of that is about me. It's all about me. It's because I love those colors. And when Mari has a book that I have read and appreciated, I like it. You know, and mosquitoes, my experience is I am a mosquito magnet. They as soon as I step outside, oh, there she is. They swarm. I have little scars up and down my legs. I don't know if I'll ever get to wear shorts again. All of it is about me. It's all based on, and that's true for all of us. You know, it's all about what's happening with me, my expectations, my beliefs, my experiences. From that then, when we think about everything that we do and we say coming from our beliefs and our experiences, then what that does is it tends to make us sort of egocentric, which means that we, in some cases anyway, we sort of consider ourselves the center of the universe. Children, that's true for them almost all the time until they get to a certain age. And for us adults, sometimes it is. You know, we still think that we're kind of in the center. a way that we can tell. What is your first reaction when something happens? When we're in that egocentric place, it's often, how is this affecting me? So when you get stuck in a traffic jam, I'm going to be late for work. I hate sitting in traffic. How it impacts me. Somebody cuts me off in traffic. Why would they do that to me? Why are they doing that? All of these things, we tend to make it be about ourselves, the egocentric piece. The second part of this center of the universe, the egocentric part, is that we sometimes make up why things are happening. When somebody cuts us off, I know someone who, when that happens, almost the first thing out of his mouth is, what does he think, his time is more important than me? So if we don't know why something's happened, we'll make it up. You know, we'll talk a lot more about this next week, about the assumptions, but we like to know why, and we like to be right. Fill in the gaps. The egocentric part. And then there is the fact that we all have likes and dislikes. And that's a great thing. Because can you imagine that if we all end up coming to church in the same outfit, basically, just like if we worked at a fast food place or something, we all have khaki pants and black tops, you know, and we all drive up in the same model color of car. You know, everybody has the same car. Everybody lives in the same kind of house. Everybody likes the same music. Everybody likes the same movies. It'd be actually kind of boring, I think, after a while. So we all have our own likes and dislikes, and that's a wonderful thing. That's a really good thing. But the other side of that is, you remember that when we are looking for approval, acceptance, and love in the outer, when someone agrees with us, when someone says, I love this about you, I will love your thing, it makes us right. Ah, good, I got that one right. I don't know if you remember being in school, But it was so important to have the right kind of clothes and wear them just the right sort of way. Way back when I was in junior high, we had these things called, I forgot what they call, a purse anyway, and the two top, the like flaps on the top, and then you were to tie your scarf, a scarf around the handle. That was the cool thing to do. And I went to Ritner, so my purse was black and my scarf was orange. I did it right because all these other kids were doing the right thing, you know? I saw a sign recently that was, or a Facebook picture on Facebook of a van, like a minivan, and then there was a bumper sticker that says, "I used to be cool." I know. It's way back. I used to do it too. So when we see that others agree with us, when we're doing things like other people or they're doing things like us, then we feel like we're right. Because again, we don't have that rudder. We don't have something inside us to say, this is, you're going along the right path or you're not. We're using others to gauge whether we're doing it or not. So the result. We see everything then through the lens of how it affects us, and everybody else is doing the very same thing. The very same thing. When someone compliments us, we have to remember that it's about their likes, their preferences, their values. It really isn't about me. That's a good thing. If I can remember that, just like we said yesterday, when someone compliments you, say thank you. You know? And you can feel good to some degree, but it isn't personal. It's about their likes. Our likes just happen to coincide with theirs. And conversely, if somebody doesn't like something about us, or say that I'm wearing purple shoes, and I'm not, but say I'm wearing purple shoes, and Neil hates purple shoes. And so he says, "Oh my God, I love you, Sharon, but man, those shoes have got to go. They're ugly shoes." That's about his likes and dislikes. It wouldn't matter whether I had them on or Marcia had them on. If he hates purple shoes, it's about his tastes, his likes and dislikes. It's about him. And what can that do? That can free us up. You remember Jesus and Peter. So when they're walking along, Peter turns around and sees that John is behind him. And what about him? And Jesus says to Peter, "What is that to you?" And that's very true. It doesn't matter. The relationship that Peter and Jesus had was in no way affected by John walking behind them or 15 people walking behind them. It was still a good, close relationship. It had nothing to do with the fact that John was there. It doesn't matter. What is that to you? There's a thing about birthdays, you know, it's the number, the age that I am really is none of my business, because it's more about just paying attention to how I'm feeling. And if someone else's opinion is positive or negative about me, again, what is that to me? It doesn't matter. It is none of my business. And if we can begin to think in that way, it's about these upsets or about someone else's perspective, we can then begin to be less defensive. We are no longer thinking that we're wrong if someone doesn't like whatever it is. We don't have to be defensive. It shouldn't have to cause conflict. It just is. "Oh, I like purple shoes. Sorry you don't. I'll try not to wear them when I'm with you." You know? You know? Something like that. And when we are able to do that, not be defensive, just remember it's not about me, what happens is, the beautiful thing that happens is, the anger and the envy and the jealousy and all of those things melt away. They just disappear. It is so freeing. So when we know that it's not about us, then we really begin to get what Ruiz is talking about when he says, don't take anything personally. What happens then is, when we stop focusing on what other people think, what they want us to do, what they want us to think, what they want us to say, then we can begin to focus on what we want, what we want. I came up at a time when it was expected that women, girls, and women would be the caregivers, and that we would really kind of suppress our own needs, perhaps our own desires, just to take care of other people and to make other people happy. I was a people pleaser for the longest time. So then when I finally got to the point where somebody, if somebody said, what do you want? I don't know. I don't know. So it was almost like getting acquainted with myself. When we learn not to take things personally, we have a chance to create what we want. Maybe discover what we want first, but then create what we want. I've told you already before that I have this house that I've just moved into, and I'm going slowly because I'm taking everything and looking at it to decide, do I love it? Do I use it? Could my son use it later? And if not, with a few exceptions, but if not, it's going. And what is coming out of that process is a place that I'm really liking. This past week, I couldn't figure out what I wanted to put on a wall. The hall wall. I ended up deciding that I would put family photos. So I have pictures of my mom and my dad when they were each about 18. And underneath that is a picture of my sister and I when we were very young girls, 6 and 3, I think. And then a picture of my two children kind of in the middle then. And then a later picture of Natalie right before she died. And then a picture of Dan and at his wedding, a beautiful picture of the two of them. I love that wall, you know. So I'm creating. I have created a wall that makes me smile when I walk by it. I'm creating a home that just feels like a sanctuary. We have an opportunity when we don't take things personally to create the lives that we want to have, the lives we want to live. It's a wonderful thing. We also then begin to realize that we're in charge of our thinking when we don't take things personally. No longer do we have to have someone say, you know, think this or do that. We can take responsibility for that. We can begin to trust ourselves. If we have to be told, I mean, it makes sense. If we have to be told, because so much of us is not something we want to admit to or practice, like the little girl singing, you know, she just never sang anymore. All those parts of us that we have put aside as not worthy, not acceptable. If we have to then count on everybody else, we don't trust ourselves. We don't know if we're making a good decision. So we're constantly having to get outer feedback. But when we begin to practice this agreement, don't take anything personally, then the personal power that we take back, we can then begin to trust ourselves. Not always an easy thing to do, but it gets easier and gets better as we go along. We learn to think for ourselves. We learn to trust again. Jesus said to Peter, come follow me. If we looked at that metaphysically, we know that Jesus represents the Christ. We have a divine identity, Linda Martella-Witsit calls it, a divine identity, that higher self, that Christ in us. We have that, and when we align with that, when we rely on that still small voice, then we get what we need. In the times of connection, in the times of meditation, we get comfort, we get strength, we get guidance, we have access to the wisdom. We are at one with that divine identity. So Peter, follow me. When we follow that divinity, that divine identity, we'll know, we'll have everything that we need. We don't have to take stuff from the outer. So then we can put our energy into these four agreements. We can put our energy into being impeccable with our word, to making sure that anything that comes out of our mouths is loving and positive. we can put our energy into beginning to change that notion of getting approval from the outer. We can learn to not take things personally. We can put our energy into that. We don't take anything personally. We gain tremendous freedom from there. We, in our society, we have not been taught typically to trust that inner guidance, to trust that higher self. We've been taught to go along with the crowd. You know, look at our media. You're not thin enough, young enough, rich enough, you know, name it. And so if you buy this product, you'll be more, we're bombarded in our society, in our culture to rely on something in the outer. We're not conditioned to do this, to learn to think for ourselves, to practice these things, but we can. These four agreements can go such a long way to breaking those old error thoughts, those ways of thinking, those old beliefs that we can't, that we don't like it, that we can break through those things. We can be impeccable with our word. We can stop taking things personally. Next week, we're going to take a look at not making assumptions. Don't make assumptions. We are learning to create lives that will be wonderfully fulfilling, wonderfully satisfying, and just beautiful. We are so grateful. God bless you. Thanks. Let's go ahead and take a moment or two now, as we do each week, to practice this divine identity, this at-one-ment with our Creator. So I invite you to gently close your outer eyes if you haven't already. Allow your bodies to become still and relaxed. Breathe. Inhale again, hold, and release. We settle into our seats, relaxed, open, receptive. We become aware that perhaps we have been wearing glasses with lens that are keeping us from seeing things clearly. We become aware that we may have some inner beliefs that are self-destructive, self-limiting. It is never too late. We pause and recognize again that when we take our attention away from the outer and move it inside to just take on that listening attitude, maybe even actually listening to the spaces between the words. We are open and receptive. Often when we do that, we can feel all of the outer world sort of melting away. We become present. With practice, even our minds that like to chatter incessantly, even those begin to slow a bit, and we have learned not to grab hold of those thoughts as they cross our minds. We just let them go on out. we come to this place of oneness, oneness with our Creator. And our hearts open. We begin to feel the love. We know that God is love. We know that we are created in that image. We know that we are love. And when we choose, we're love in expression. Right now, we allow that love to permeate our entire bodies, soothing, restoring, soothing our minds, settling us into a recognition of a deep peace. And it is here, in this very quiet space, that we realize that we are the beloved of our Creator. We are children of our God, much loved. We recognize that there is nothing we have to do or be or say to have that love. To be that love. And so, as the song, Allison's song, said earlier, we're doing the best we can. When we are open, like we are now, when we are receptive and we feel this love and this peace, and we rest in that willingly, openly, receptively, we become expressions of the Most High. We rest here, receiving. And what we receive depends on what we need in the moment. Sometimes we receive guidance. Sometimes we receive peace. A peace that just fills, letting us know that all is well in our world. It is in these times that we gain everything that we need to have the courage, to have the willingness, to recognize old error thinking. Old limiting thinking. We recognize when we're open that it doesn't have to be either or. Sometimes it's both and. We open ourselves and we're willing, courageous, to open ourselves to be the highest and best we can. And we have the courage to do that. Because we are at one with our Creator. Because we have that divine identity. Because we know that the power within is greater than any outer circumstance, any outer appearance. We feel this love. And it becomes easier and easier to allow that love to express when we are not in meditation. To be willing to be vulnerable out in the world. We feel the openness, we feel the oneness, we feel the peace. And as we do each week, let us set aside some time for silence, some time for true at-one-ment feeling, connection, presence, communion, We are one in the silence. We come out of these times of communion renewed, refreshed, re-energized, willing to step forward in the world with confidence, knowing that we're never alone. Willing to practice practical spirituality. Willing to be the best that we can because of the knowledge of knowing who and what we truly are, spiritual beings. We are grateful for this awareness, grateful for the times that we do feel our connection, grateful for all of the ways that Spirit works in us and through us and as us, lighting up our world, being the light of the world. We are grateful for the comfort and the strength and the support that we always have available for those times when we feel tired and incapable. And so as we begin to bring this time to a close, let us come back into this room, back into our bodies, renewed, but also very mindful of the love, the peace that we are, that we have an opportunity to be in our worlds. We claim that with gratitude and with love. And so as we do each week, let us bring this contemplation time to a close by together affirming our Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts. And lead us not in temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen.